Hi, this is Danielle from the Gels Curator, and this is episode 46 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Today I'm talking to one of my favorite people. We met through art and became friends through art. She is not only insanely talented, and completely self-taught by the way, she's also one of the most generous people I know. We have spent many hours eating baked goods, drinking coffee, and talking about art. Kind of a big deal for me because until meeting Sarah and our other friend, Canadian artist Jessica Bell, I hadn't talked to anyone about my work in years. Anyway, we did it again. We talked and we talked and we talked and we talked. Lots of you have been asking me to make the episodes a bit longer so that you can listen in your studio. Well, how's an hour and a half for you? Yeah, see, we talked a lot. I also did that thing where I pretend that I'm not recording anymore and then we keep going. So there was that. Oh, and in case there are kids in the studio car room with you, be warned that in that bonus conversation, there may be a tiny bit of swearing. These things happen. If only I'd had a baked good or two in front of me, maybe it would have kept me more polite. Okay, anyway, enough of my voice. Let's get Sarah in here. Calling Vancouver. Hello.
Hi, Danielle.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, I'm so excited to do this.
Me too.
Little does everybody know, they're just going to be in on one of our conversations.
I know. All we need is a cup of coffee.
I know. I was thinking that. I was like, we need coffee and blueberry muffins.
We really do, just to celebrate.
I know. Do you have anything delicious with you right now?
I have the dregs of a Jameson's.
Oh, you're doing it right.
No.
That's so funny.
A small one.
Oh, that's good. I don't even have a glass of water. And as I was running around trying to get ready, I thought, oh, it's just not the same with Sarah if we don't have a baked good and a coffee.
I know.
I'll just pretend.
Yeah.
Oh,
we're creative. We pretend.
That's right. Okay, there you go. This will be our first creative project.
That's right.
Imagine the blueberry muffin is in front of you now. You know what's so funny? I start every podcast by saying, oh, we've emailed lots, but I've never actually spoken to you. I think you are the person I've spoken most to about art ever in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Me?
I know. We've only had like 4 conversations about it.
Wow.
Well, about my art. I never talk to anybody, but I always talk to you because, I don't know, you're just, maybe it's the blueberry muffins and coffee loosens me up.
You're drunk on blueberries.
No, it could be it. No, we've had so many good talks, and I just, when I had Jessica on, I gushed for a little while because it was, you know, same with her. Like, you guys were just so pivotal in me being able to open up and actually talk about my own art, and I don't know if you know that.
I don't, but it tells me that we don't know when we're in those pivotal moments for another person.
Yeah, you guys were just eating chocolate and...
I know, we just thought, what? Oh, this is a nice sunny day and we're talking about stuff and we're having fun. But, you know, you never know when you're going to make an impact.
Yeah, no, like I think you guys probably thought I was coming to talk about Gels Curator stuff. And then I was like, so...
So, pregnant pause.
And it was just so, I just remember feeling like it was the first time since my bad story about university and I just...
Yeah, I do.
Didn't fit in. I just didn't feel like I had my people. And so I just didn't talk to anybody about it for 20 years. And then, so that was a big deal for me to show up with my box of chocolate goodies from Meinhardt's or wherever I went. And to talk to you guys, and you were so, I knew you wouldn't be mean. That's why I asked you, but I don't know what I expected, but it was the most nurturing, I don't know. It was the best afternoon ever. I put it in my new book.
Oh.
I wrote about it in my new book because it was just so, life-changing for me. And then when I was in Vancouver last time, having coffee somewhere and realized, wait a minute, I think I'm in your neighborhood.
That's right.
And I emailed you and you were there, I think, 12 minutes later.
I really was. I ran.
And I had a scone. And that was such a great talk. And, yeah, so I'm so happy to do this and let other people in on our awesome talks. And so hopefully everybody at home can quickly grab a baked good of some kind.
Yeah.
And a cup of coffee and then come back because it's, yeah, it's always such a nice chat with you.
Well, the irony is I haven't found anyone to talk about my art with comfortably.
Really?
No, I don't ever talk. That's the irony, is I'm tongue-tied and like I have a difficult time approaching people.
Really?
Yeah, I'm always afraid of, you know, the reaction.
About your work or just the things you want to bring up?
Work. About the work. I always think people are going to go, well, you know, it's really not that serious, or it's not good enough, or, you know, you're not getting what you want. That's what I think.
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks.
I think so, too. I should probably take a risk like you did.
Well, I mean, that was in a moment of desperation. That was because my good friends in Seattle said, we want you to have a show, and they forced me to do it. And then they said 18 new pieces. And I was like, what? And they thought it would be fun for me, and I thought it would be fun for me until it came time to make 18 new pieces. And then I was like freaking out, and I didn't know what to do. And a friend of mine, a blogger friend who isn't an artist, said, don't you have art friends that you can talk to this, you know, talk about this stuff with? And I was like, no, like, why on earth would you talk to other people about it? And then I thought, and I didn't know you guys that well, but I thought, you know what? Sarah and Jessica, I bet they would be nice. And at the very least, we get chocolate pastries.
We're not nice.
No, you weren't.
Not gonna lie.
No, you weren't. You were very, that was the nice thing. You just delivered information in a really supportive, kind way.
Yeah.
And set me forth. And then actually, when we had coffee last time, when I called you and you ran over, I showed you a bunch of collages that I still haven't shown anybody except you, that I'd been working on. And remember those ones?
Yes, of course.
And then you said they were nice. And then I went home and I emailed you, I think, the next day. And I said, what did you really think of them? And you wrote back and said, no, I think they're nice. And I was like, well, that's nice. Thank you. But like, really, I want actual feedback.
Yeah.
And you gave me great feedback. You said, because they were more fun. They didn't really, they're very narrative and fun, but they didn't have any purpose. They were completely random. What I would do is I would lift up all the big stuff, all the big papers on the top of my collage bits bowl, reach in with my eyes closed, basically, grab a bunch of stuff off the bottom, and then make a collage from it, and which was very freeing for me as an exercise. But then you said in an email, I wish they meant something. Like, I wish they had, you know, I wish the narratives were actually a narrative.
More controlled.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about? Like, what's the story you're telling? And I didn't get my backup. I didn't, you know, I just thought, yep, she's totally right. And I appreciate that so much. And, like, you know, if you can find somebody, you and Lisa Golightly and Jessica Bell are that for me. I just feel completely comfortable with you guys. I know that you're going to give me honest feedback nicely, and that is invaluable. So, I mean, that's my wish for everybody. If you can find just one person, you know, that you can talk to openly like that, it's just a gift.
It is. It is. I'm, you know, I'm surprised they haven't had a life outside our conversation. What happened to them?
I don't know. I kind of moved on. I've been doing these weird little collages with paint, and I'm having so much fun that, but those ones are still there. But I found that I was trying too hard to make stories.
Uh-huh.
And it just wasn't working. So they're just sitting there, and I think one day I'll be like, got it. But that day has not come, and that's okay. I'm busy doing other things, but.
Yeah.
There's something there.
Well, the work you're doing recently is very, very focused, very narrative.
Yes, it is. See, I took your advice. And I embraced my funniness. That was the other thing, is I always felt like I wasn't allowed to be funny. So I've embraced the funniness. So it's all good. It's, you know, anyway, look at this. As soon as I get you on the line, I start talking about my work. Let's talk about you, Sarah.
Let's.
Okay. Well, you know, I talked about this on the Jessica episode too, that when I first met you and Jessica, I was so intimidated because I'd been to all these shows in Vancouver and it was always Sarah G, Jessica Bell, Ben Skinner, Zoe Pollock, blah, 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 all you Vancouverites. And I was so intimidated to meet any of you. And then I met you guys and you were the nicest people ever.
Well, they're the nicest people ever, too, yes.
Yeah, it's just like a group of insanely nice people. And so I mean, I've loved your work. I've been seeing your work around for so long, but I realized, probably because every time we have coffee and baked goods, I talk about myself.
And that's the way I like it.
Yeah, you probably just keep asking questions to deflect. But I was like, I know some of your stories, but I want to know more of your stories and go into detail on a few, because there's some crazy ones way back when.
Yes.
That have turned you into the person and the artist that you are. And I want to talk about that, if you're cool to talk about that.
I'm cool. Yeah, I'm cool.
Okay, let's start back there then. You know where.
Well, I think the most important thing is I'm such a late bloomer. I mean, I'm on the older side, and I've just started this art journey really late in life, because I had a lot of bumps along the way, a lot of distractions and a lot of years of wondering what I was going to do and not knowing.
And during those years of wondering, were you always thinking about art, or was that not on your radar?
It was, well, it's funny. I've always been kind of a creative kid, but very more academic.
Mm-hmm.
More like, I wrote stories when I was a little weird, little introverted kid. I would make my own little books and illustrate them with, you know, funny drawings. But no, I didn't even know what an artist was for the longest time, or how to be one, or God, that was a club I couldn't join.
Right. Where did you grow up?
We were a peripatetic family. We moved every year. It was really unsettling. I went to about 10 different schools.
Oh my gosh.
And for a shy weirdo, it was really hard. But that's what we did. And so I, in and around Victoria, BC.
Okay.
Kamloops, Ottawa, twice. We moved around.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you were just writing your stories and doing your thing, and
yeah, hand making hundreds of tiny little stamps with tiny little imaginary animals on them.
Oh my gosh, do you still have any?
I do. My dad recently gave me a little tiny book that I made about the 27th letter of the alphabet, which was being hunted down in the Amazon.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
I think I was about 7. And it was illustrated with actual burnt matches from the campfires of the explorers that were looking for this crazy letter.
Oh my gosh, you need to put that in a show now.
I know. I was a little weirdo, but
the little weirdos make the best artists when they grow up.
They do. I hope I'm a good artist, but I didn't really. I've only in the last 5 years have thought of myself shyly as an artist, maybe.
If you were out somewhere, like tonight, and somebody said, "What do? What would you say?"
I would square my shoulders and take a deep breath and go, "I'm an artist." And then laugh nervously.
And they would probably go, "Cool.
Cool, what kind of art?"
Yeah.
And then the follow-up question is, "What kind of art?" And the answer is, "Hard-edged abstraction." And then the conversation always stops.
That is so funny.
It's not a cuddly art form that many people feel drawn to.
Maybe you say it like that so that they'll stop asking questions.
Maybe. It's a great deflector.
Yeah. What do? That's so interesting. But how, okay, so in the last 5 years you felt more comfortable, but how long have you been making art now?
Well, it depends what you mean by art. For about 10 years when I was very poor and in my 20s and early 30s, I sewed pictures on my sewing machine because I loved scrap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I developed this thing where I'd make these photorealist little appliques out of scrap fabric. I was doing that for about 10 years and selling them too, but it never felt like art to me. It felt like desperation. It felt like, what can I turn this garbage into?
And then sell for cash.
Exactly. It had a kind of a hunt and gather quality to it. I was desperate. I didn't formalize my thoughts. I didn't know what I was doing. I just did it because I could.
Mm-hmm.
And
But then you were working a day job.
I was. I worked a lot of really, really crappy retail, bookstore, research assistant, academic editorial assistant type jobs.
Huh. And did you feel like you were suffocating the whole time, or was it?
Oh, my soul was shriveling and drying out and dying every day I sat behind a desk. I just hated every moment of it.
But you didn't know what you wanted to do.
No, I didn't. And
that's the worst.
I know. I was just trying to keep body and soul together. And that, like, it was basically subsistence. And it's hard to think about art in that state.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And it was really exhausting, like emotionally tiring for a lot of years there. And, you know, I just thought, oh, I guess I'm just going to trudge through life.
Oh, that's so awful.
Well, you know, it was fun too, because I was young and, you know, I knew a lot of musicians and we would dance the night away kind of thing.
Okay, it's starting to sound better now.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't all sad, but in a way it was just moment to moment.
Yeah. I think that's for a lot of people through their 20s though, you know, like where you just don't. When I graduated with my BFA, I was just so lost. I ended up moving back home, living in my parents' basement. And my dad, God love him, set up the laundry room like a little art studio so that I could, you know, I was so broken after that undergrad that I just didn't want to paint. He basically forced me, which was good. But I didn't know. I was like, do I go to design school? Do I do my MFA? Do I just live in my parents' basement till I die? You know, there's options, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was, I just remember feeling very lost for about 3 years because I was always so type A. I always had a plan. And this was the first time in my life through my 20s where I didn't have a plan. But yes, there were a lot of dancing the night away moments as well.
Yeah, it's hard not to have fun when you're young and beautiful.
Exactly. It's all over now.
It's all over now. It's all work, work, work.
That's right. Okay, so yes, go on. So trying to figure out where you were going.
Yeah, I was also really sick for a lot of my 20s. Because of a car accident that I suffered when I was 15, mm-hmm. that basically disabled me for the rest of my life. And it was coping with that constant struggle, physical struggle and the financial struggle. It just kept me in a very dark place for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never get over that, but I think everything else has improved so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you told me, I think you told me that story that over the blueberry muffins about the accident, and it's shocking that you are alive.
Yes.
And I just sat there. I think my mouth was open through the entire story. It was just so crazy. And are you still in pain now? Like, do you just have chronic pain because of it?
Yes. Yeah. I have it all. In fact, I have it all the time and I don't even know what it is anymore. It's just this amorphous thing. Yeah.
Oh, and it blows my mind. So I want to go back and actually talk about that accident more, but it blows my mind that given that you have this chronic pain, that your work is so big and meticulous, and aren't you on the floor for a lot of it?
Oh yeah, I work on the floor on my knees.
Yeah, so what are you doing down there? Like,
well, I can't stand comfortably and I can't really sit comfortably. It works for me. I mean,
so if you're on your knees, you're in less discomfort than if you're standing at an easel or something.
Yeah, yeah. Because the accident pretty much crushed the lower half of my body. So I don't stand or walk very comfortably. So, but my knees are strong. My back is strong. So that's good.
Oh my God.
And I have legs, which is pretty miraculous.
It is.
So I don't know. I have to say that in the last 5 to 7 years when I've sort of become this artist person, I have never felt better in my life. In fact, when I'm working, I don't even think about it. I don't think about the pain. I don't think about the past. I don't think about anything. I'm just in this wonderful creative moment.
Surrounded by beautiful colors and
yes,
and perfect shapes. And
well, the fact that I do this sort of meticulous hard edge work with very orderly, very precise, very mathematical, I think it's a way of kind of gathering in all those frayed bits of my life and kind of trying to put them into order. I don't want to get too, you know, Freudian about it, but I really do think I'm drawn to really, really clean, perfect, minimal, simple work with no emotion, no brush strokes, no narrative, because when you've been through so much suffering and chaos, you don't want to do it on the canvas.
Mm-hmm. There's been too much fray and was that a subconscious thing, or when you started working that way and then you kind of were like, oh, it's probably because of this, or did you set out to do that?
I think it was subconscious at first, but I really quickly keyed into it because when we moved to Vancouver about 12 years ago, that's when I decided, yes, I'm gonna try and make this art thing a reality. I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I
and were you taught, you and Tim already married?
Yeah, we've been married for a very, very long time. So I married in my mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
So he said to me, look, my career is taking off. I can support you. I don't want you to think about anything but art.
He is the best guy in the world.
He is the best guy. He has enabled me to live the life I feel like I've meant to live. Because he said, look, here's your freedom. Take it.
How did you feel guilty about that? Or did you take it and
ran? I feel guilty all the time. Yeah. I feel but I make up for my guilt by, doing, this sounds so sexist, but it really is just a division of labor. I keep the house. I cook the meals. I do all the contracting when we're renovating. I do all that stuff. I'm a good house person.
Right.
So when he comes home at the end of the day, he doesn't have to think about it.
Right. Yeah, that's a good division of labor. We had the same thing when I stayed home with Charlie for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, and at first it was so weird because I'd always worked probably more than Greg. I was such a workaholic. And then when I stayed home with Charlie, I was like, oh, I should probably learn to cook. And maybe I should clean the house every now and again. And all of a sudden I became this like domestic. I had no idea what I was doing. And, I had a few super feminist friends that are like, you know, what are you doing? I'm like, well, it's just, he goes to work. He doesn't want to be at work for 10 hours a day, but he's making all of our money.
Mm-hmm.
So the least I can do is take care of the home front. So when he gets here, you know, he doesn't have to think about where dinner's coming from.
That's right. It has nothing to do with being a man or a woman or any of that. It's who does the best, you know, at what they do.
Well, I haven't done laundry in 17 years. He's very particular about laundry. And apparently I'm not even allowed near. Anyway, works for me.
That's funny because Tim was always the first to volunteer to do laundry. He goes, I'll do the laundry. And I'm like, Okay.
Did you hear that they ran into each other, Tim and Greg?
At a marketing conference.
Yeah, like at a marketing luncheon or something. And he recognized Greg's last name.
Did they bro out over being the husbands of artists?
I think so. High fives.
Yeah.
They're so cool and awesome. Sure, they were little weirdos, but now they're so cool. Something like that, probably.
The best parties.
Yeah. Greg came home. Tim is just the nicest guy. And I said, I know, Sarah would agree.
Oh, he is the nicest guy. It's almost 30 years of marriage, of togetherness and marriage. And I still get excited when he comes home from work.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, that's Tim. And I get a little thrill.
Oh, that's so sweet. And he probably has the exact same thing. I've met him a handful of times at different events, and he's so supportive. And it is such a gift. And I remember you saying that one time that you felt like if you were buying expensive papers, you know, you felt guilty because it's like, oh, God, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also have to buy those expensive papers so that you can make the work that you want to make.
And also, I don't feel guilty anymore because I make my own money now.
Yeah, I was going to say, now it's paying off because now you're rocking out. And it's so, I always saw you showing, which is why I was jealous of you in the first place. But it just seems like in the last, I don't know, what do you think, like 2 years?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Things have just taken off and they're going to just even more and more and more. I'm just so excited to watch and so proud of you and okay, anyway, we can't talk about what's happening in the future. We're not done with the past yet. Or we haven't even touched the present. Okay, so can we go into the accident, or you want to just say that there was an accident and leave it at that?
Well, I don't know how into it you want to go. I'm happy to talk about it. I mean,
well,
it was
when you told me, because I just met you and you're this talented, cool lady with amazing work in this cool old house and baking me muffins. And then you were like, oh, yes, and the lower half of my body was shattered. And, you know, you're just like, what, a what? And it's just so inspiring that you didn't, I mean, living with the pain and everything, that you didn't let it stop you, and you know, you've continued on, and you're a positive, lovely person. And I just think you could have gone the other way. So I just want you to talk a little bit about like what the accident was, and we won't have to go further than that, but just so people know.
Sure. Well, I was hit by a speeding car and had multiple compound fractures when I was 15. So, I mean, that's the worst time to be disabled and, you know, and seriously injured, because there went puberty, adolescence, learning to drive was out of the question, making friends. I was already an introvert, so I mean, it stunted my growth, I think, for a lot of years. Made me very, I would have a major reconstructive surgery once a year until I was about 21, I think.
Wow.
So 6 months out of the year would be me in bed. And because I was out of the house by then, I was alone in these dumpy shared rooms with cockroaches lying in bed for months at a time. And it was hard. It was really, really hard because I did it by myself. And it was because the surgeries were in Vancouver, a city that I didn't know. So I'd have to get on the bus, go to Vancouver, have the surgery, and somehow, and I don't even remember, make it home in a full cast.
Oh my God.
I know. I don't even remember. Honestly, I don't even remember how I did it.
It makes me want to hug you.
It makes me want to hug myself.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, it was a really, really difficult time.
And it is shocking that you survived. Like, I just can't even, like, and so did you have to be in a wheelchair at the beginning, or?
I could always make it home on crutches and then, you know, lie in bed until I felt better. And then I had a job that they would wait for me to get better in this, and then they would rehire me.
Oh, every
that's
year. Amazing.
So I did that for 4 years until I couldn't take it anymore. And I went to university just to get out of the work situation.
What did you do in university?
I got a double honors in English and creative writing because I was so sure I was going into the academic, because I was a smarty pants and I loved language. So I thought that was my future.
Wow. Is that where you met Tim?
Yes. I met him almost my first couple of weeks there. And I was instant. Like, it was an explosion. It was too much for me to handle, so I'd ignored it for 2 years. And I just...
Poor Tim.
Well, he felt it too, but we sort of felt each other out for 2 years and became really good friends before the romance blossomed. But
that's actually good. Very smart. That's actually very smart.
It is good.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I just, yeah, when you told me like that your shoe fly off, or like,
yeah. Sorry. The laces broke with the force of the hit, and the shoe flew about 25 feet.
Oh.
But the amazing thing is I landed, like I was flung into the air, and I landed quite a distance away at the feet of an orthopedic surgeon who was out jogging.
No.
Yes. He literally was bowled over by this body.
With compound fractures.
With compound fractures, and he's the one that just, you know, put me on my back and told me not to move and called the ambulance and all that.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Angels.
He visited me in the hospital and he's like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it.
That's, there's a novel.
I know. Well, no one would believe it.
No, that when you said that, it was like, what corny show
I know.
Is this from?
I know. Reality is so corny.
That's a really good friend of mine was in a terrible car accident. A car flipped 4 times one way, 4 times the other way, broke her neck. And there was nobody on the road. Like, somebody clipped her and kept going. And there was nobody else on the road. It was this little backcountry road. And the guy driving behind her was an off-duty fireman. And he got out and stabilized her neck and called, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and she's perfectly fine. Like, they told her she'd never walk again, all these things, and she was walking within 3 days. And
like, unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's just like he was just placed there. And it sounds like your guy was just placed there too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Have you written this down, seeing how you're a writer, smarty pants?
No, not yet. But I do have all my medical records and the big bulky medical records. I might do it someday.
You should do it in one of your teeny tiny books with matchsticks.
Tiny little books, I know.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I just think that it just makes you who the person that you are. I mean,
of course,
traumatic events like that, they're not great. I don't think anything good happened out of it, but it did make me very determined.
Yeah.
I mean, and very, very, I can do it attitude. I've never lost that because I had to do a lot of the healing on my own.
Yeah.
For reasons I won't go into, but I didn't. I had to really make it on my own.
And boy, have you. And so we got that. So you do all these jobs all this time, mm-hmm. blah, 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 not really thinking about art.
Yeah.
So then you guys moved to Vancouver.
Yep.
Tim says, do it.
Well, no, we moved to Vancouver and I started a company with a business partner making furniture and soft furnishings out of reclaimed and recycled materials. And I was always a sewer because of my background making these little applique pictures.
Yeah.
So I turned that into a business and struggled with that for about 3 years, 3-4 years, and that partnership collapsed. And I found myself back at square one thinking, now what?
Yeah.
Now I'm really old. You know, and now I'm in my 40s. Now what do I do? And that's when it hit me because I got bit by the modernist bug.
Oh, I was going to ask how... Yeah. And was it just from seeing other work that you loved and you just,
Yes, it was researching these furnishings from the 30s, the Bauhaus, going into the 60s. And just all of a sudden I realized that this is exactly what I love. I love these interiors, these 70s high modernist interiors that we based our company on. And I thought, I really love this stuff. And the more I read and the more I researched, the more I thought, it's because I want to make art for these interiors. Hmm. It's because I want to make that work. I want to make it. I don't want to look at it. I myself want to make it. And then I thought, oh, I can't. I can't possibly. I'm not trained as an artist. I don't have any right to say that. But I did it. I did it.
And so what was the first piece you made?
The first piece was pretty much exactly what I'm making now. It kind of fell out of me.
So it was cut paper right from the get-go.
Cut paper, yep. Yep. I've always been really attracted to really hard edges, really. And I thought, well, I don't want to paint the hard edge. I want to cut the hard edge.
Hmm. And so was the first one a circle?
The first one I made was, no, it was more of a series of half circles.
You still have it?
I do.
Can I? Yeah. I put a little post together with every podcast, so I'll put it up so people can see what the first one was.
Yeah, I'll show you. It's not that different from what I'm doing now.
And so when you, how big is it?
How big was it?
Yeah.
Small, 16 by 20.
And so when you did you think, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I felt this rush of adrenaline as if I jumped out of an airplane. I thought, oh my God, I can make it. Like, I can physically make these things. And then I just went on a tear. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I just made and made and made.
Oh,
and,
isn't that the best?
Oh, I had my first show within the same year, and I made 38 pieces that I framed and hung.
Did you see Tim at all during that year?
I don't believe I did.
No.
Well, a hand would hand me tea and coffee every once in a while. I don't know whose hand it was.
I can't look up. Just pass the tea. Oh, that is the best. And so during that time, so you're going to have this show, did you have the, were you just so in the zone? Did you have the moments where you're like, oh God, I'm not really an artist. What am I doing? Or were you just like, oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just.
But what about you had a show lined up?
I know. Well, I made line my own show. I just thought, you know, I'm just going to do it. I've always been, I'm not really good at joining things or doing things with people. I do things by myself, for myself. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to have my own show. I'm going to rent my own space.
Oh, my God.
And if I fail, I fail for myself. I don't fail for anyone else. And I fully expected to fail, or at least go out in flames. So I thought, I'm just going to rent my own space and throw my own show and see what happens.
And what happened?
It was a huge success. I sold almost everything I made.
Oh my God. What year was this?
Of course, I sold them to friends and family.
Well, still.
And then that quickly ended.
Because now they all had a Sarah G original and they were like,
that's right.
What year was that?
2000, let's see, it was about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I started seeing you around, Charlie was born 2006. I probably started seeing your stuff around 2008, 2009.
Yeah, that was just about when I got started.
Mm-hmm. And I would see it everywhere.
Well,
like Cheaper Show, and it just seemed like everywhere I went, there was you and Jessica.
I got into the Cheaper Show, which was huge for me, twice, and I got into a couple of other shows. But honestly, Vancouver is not a great place to show. I haven't been showing here for a long time.
Yeah, it is hard to break.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so now you've got your gallery, you've got Mayberry in Toronto, right?
Yep.
And that's going really well.
Oh, they're the best. They just reached out to me and they said, we love your work. Would you consider showing here? And they've been my friends and supporters since.
Oh, that's so amazing.
I'm having a solo show there at the end of this year.
Yeah.
I think, or early next.
How many pieces are you making for that?
They're great. They just say, oh, we'll take all you got.
And are they, they're all quite giant these days.
They are. They're, and I have a new studio that's bigger, so I'm
filling it.
Oh, yeah,
because you moved since I saw you.
We moved, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I got to come for another visit.
You
oh,
really
that's
do.
So cool. So I want to quickly talk about, because I didn't know this either. So I've written about your big circular pieces, and I didn't know actually until we met the first time and chatted that the ones where each color represented that walk on your block.
Yes. I started, it's my tidy mind is like, how can I pick elements apart in a really tidy way? You know, I started thinking, there's so many colors on this block. It was the block of Pender,
mm-hmm.
And Maine.
Yeah.
Walking up my street, and I started looking around, and I thought, oh my God, all these fluorescent pinks and oranges from the Chinese food stalls and the sales and the litter and the people on the street. And it was all a big jumble. And I just decided to take all the colors in order that I saw them and in the volume in which I saw them and separate them into bands of a circle and create this world that has been reordered and reimagined by color.
So smart.
I did 5 different blocks, city blocks. And these were huge circles. They were about 50 inches in diameter.
Yeah, I know them. I've seen them in person and they are stunning. I mean, they're stunning in person. And, you know, being a graphic designer, like I'm attracted to that kind of stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So I was already like, wow. I mean, it's so vibrant and so big and so perfect. Like that's the other thing about your work. It's just always flawless. And then I heard, you know, and then you told me that, and I love them even more. So that's why I wanted to talk about it so that, you know, when I put them in the post, people can see, like, it just, there's so much more in them. And then I, you know, I know that block and it's like, you can instantly picture it.
Yes. And the thing is, I couldn't control the colors either.
Yeah.
They had to be, not only that, they had to be the exact tone of the color. So it was a great experiment for me and anyone else who wants to learn how to mix color.
Yeah, because you painted the paper, right?
I painted it, yeah, and I had to mix the color perfectly. I took many, many photographs, and they thought I was a lunatic taking pictures of litter and jackets and signs.
Okay, I have to ask Ben Skinner this too. Are you a tiny bit OCD?
No.
Oh, that's what Ben said too, and I didn't believe him.
No, I in fact, my work is not like my life. I'm a very tidy person, but somehow when I'm at work, some part of me takes over. I don't know what it is. It's a very orderly person.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think you're probably exactly right. Your life was so out of your own control for so long that now you can fully take the reins.
Also, I'm a very private person. I'm not really interested in expression at all, like personal expression. And my art, in fact, Jessica Bell said this about, she says, your art is an extension of your privacy, because I'm really interested in hiding behind, I'll be honest, hiding behind these sort of strict mathematical principles in my art.
Right, you're following rules.
I'm following rules and putting things down in order, you know, very orderly, very precise, because it's a way of kind of containing myself.
Mm-hmm. Because, you don't have to expose yourself because you're following these rules.
That's right. And it's very peaceful to look at a piece of art that isn't screaming at you, you know.
Yeah.
The colors might be vibrant. They're very vibrant fluorescent colors, but I would hope that the compositions are so serene and so ordered that when you look at them, your brain kind of clicks into a new space.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always think of it as theta waves. I don't know if you know, but theta is there's alpha waves, beta waves, but theta waves are almost asleep.
Oh.
But you're still conscious, but you're in that kind of peaceful zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going for.
Oh, I love that. Are any of your pieces named that?
No, not yet.
There's the next series.
That's right.
Theta.
Theta.
Okay, so we also have to talk about the awesome drawing machine.
Oh, yes.
Mainly just so that I can put a picture of myself trying the drawing machine. Do you know how sick I was after I left?
Well, you know, a lot of people have wobbled out of that room very sick to their stomachs. And I'm like, what?
Oh, so I don't know. Did you email me one of those, or how did I see the one the first time? I think you might have emailed it and said, hey, I'm doing these drawings. And I was like,
yeah,
how could she do? And like, they're again, perfect circles. And I was like, please don't tell me you're doing these freehand, because I'm going to have to jump off a bridge or something. And you're like, no, I fashioned this machine. And you made this rotating table, basically.
Yep.
That you could clip paper onto and then sit above it with your markers, with your beautiful markers, and it would spin and you just touch down and do your thing. So you made them. I loved them instantly. We actually ended up, I put a little show together with them.
Yep.
In Steveston, and that was so much fun.
That was so fun.
Yeah, at Goodrun, and it was so beautiful. I loved it so much. And then you let me come over and I think gave me more baked goods. I don't think you let people into your house unless there's baked goods waiting. And I got to try it. And I was so nervous. It was so funny. And I get incredibly motion sick. Like just anywhere. Like in a car, in a plane. Like I have to drug myself on planes. I'm never going to go on a cruise in my life because I just throw up the entire time. And so I thought, well, I'll do one because I know I'm going to feel sick, but I'm going to do one. That was the most addictive. I think you let me do like 5.
And you got so better so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time you were, it's hard to control.
Yeah.
Very difficult to do. It looks easy, but it isn't. And then by the fifth, you were going at it like a pro.
Well, and then I was so proud of myself. And you were like, I got to take them home. It was like I was in elementary school. And then, so I was so proud. I unclipped them. And then all yours were there. And I was like, oh, wait, because I wasn't bold enough. I would chicken out and I would take the marker away too soon. And then I would look at yours and like the lines were much thicker and much darker and your color choices side by side were much stronger. I actually have one on my mantle that's been here since we moved into this house, a big, huge one that you did, all pinks and yellows, and it's very warm and I love it. I look at it every single day. And but it was so cool and fun. And so have you been playing with that anymore, or is that just gathering dust in the corner now?
Oh, I do it all the time because
do
it's
you?
So fun. I mean, I've made hundreds.
Yeah.
And it always is different. It never, I've tried other mediums. I've tried paintbrushes. I think one of my strengths is that I always think, what if I did that?
Yeah.
What if I added that to that? And what if I, you know, what if I made a machine that revolved? What would happen? I'm a what if thinker, and I'm always Tim always laughs at me because he says I can't follow a recipe. I can't do anything the way I'm supposed to.
That is so good. Because that's what a lot of artists get hung up on, right? Yeah. It's like it'll either just stay in their head.
Right.
You know, I mean, and you proved that to yourself the first time that you said, well, I'm going to cut these shapes and make this, you know.
Yeah. What would happen if I did that? I mean, the space between me thinking that and me doing it is about half a second. But unfortunately, it can backfire because I tend to jump into things.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares?
I don't mind making mistakes. No. And the other thing about being an artist, starting an art career a little bit older, is that you're not scared of making mistakes. You're not scared of looking like an idiot. I don't care what people think,
really.
I've never really cared, but now I really don't care. You don't have to like my work, and lots of people don't. You don't have to talk to me in a certain way. I really don't mind. I mean, it's a kind of comfort with myself.
Mm-hmm. You've found a place where you're happy, and that's what matters.
I feel good about what I'm doing. I know I'm not there yet. You know, I've got a ways to go. But, yeah, I'm...
You know, the thing
calm,
is,
I think
good artists are never there.
No, exactly.
You know, you'll always be pushing yourself. You'll always be thinking what the next thing is. You know, I was saying that to somebody, you know, and we were talking about success. And I was like, well, hold on. You know, like what do you think success is? Is it having your first show in New York? But then if you have that, then you're going to want a show in London. You know what I mean? Like there's... That's how artists are. Like there's never that sense of, oh, I guess I'm done.
Yes, I know. Then you die.
Yeah. Like that's when you'll think it. Yeah. On your deathbed at 99, you'll be like, okay, well, that was the last one.
No, I would probably be going, no, let me just, I just got it. And then I would die reaching for the pencil.
And then, yeah, you could, you just continue on in the, wherever you go next.
I want to take my rotating drawing machine and put it on a wobbling board.
Yeah.
That would wobble in a controlled way so that the lines would wobble.
Oh, boy.
Now, that would
be. We'd need a bucket for sure. Yeah. I was trying to be all polite. I had such a fun afternoon with you. And then you kept bringing out these big, beautiful pieces of rag paper for me to use. Like it wasn't even like crappy paper. And so I just kept going. Remember, I was like, ooh, what would a ballpoint pen be like? And I did one with a ballpoint pen. And by the time I left, I was walking up your street to the car and I was like, I am going to throw up in someone's garden. But look at all the things I got to take home. But anyway, yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. So do you show those anymore or do you just sort of do them for your own, for fun?
Mayberry has about 15 of them.
Oh, good.
For sale on their gallery. And I think it's online as well.
Okay, good. Uh-huh. Good. Cause they are just so brilliant. I love them so much.
Oh, thank you. They're so fun to make.
Yeah. Well, I know firsthand. I'm going to ask you one more thing and then I'll do the speed round. But, I've always been curious, like outside of your circles, like your compositions are so, I don't know, they don't look like anything. Like they don't, it's like, oh, look, it's a boat. You know, so how do you come up with your compositions? Do they just sort of pop into your head or do you sketch them out first? Do you choose colors first and let that dictate it? Like, how does that all go down?
Well, I do design everything on a computer program.
Okay.
So I have this design program that I have all the elements on my computer. I do, and then I have a large second screen, like a notebook. I move the shapes around and see about a pleasing composition of elements. And I'm really drawn to certain elements, like the oval, the circle, pipe images.
Yeah, I was going to say like those curves, those U
curves.
Yeah,
pipes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't get them out of my head. So they're there, mm-hmm. and I move them around till I see what I like, and then I start cutting. I mean, it is quite it's very planned out, very meticulous, until I get to the actual, when I have the elements with me, the pieces of, well, I'm working in styrene now, not paper.
Okay. What's so styrene?
Thicker? Polystyrene is like a plastic that's very much like a thick piece of paper.
Oh.
Only it's plastic. And it's
how do you
easy.
Cut it?
You score it and then you snap it.
But what about your U's and stuff?
I have a digital plotter. It's like a sign making machine that I've retrofit to talk to my computer.
You are a nerd.
And the knife glides along the styrene in the shape that I want, and then I snap it free of the styrene.
Does it ever break?
So pleasing. I mean, yes, it can break. Styrene's quite brittle.
Yeah.
So you have to know how to do it. I mean, it took me, well, every, I feel like I'm constantly reinventing the wheel here. Every time I try something new, I have to take 1,000 hours to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
But so I would cut the shapes on styrene, snap them free, and then compose them on the board. And that's when everything changes. It very rarely looks like I planned it. Because color changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, when I paint the elements different colors, it's like notes in a music. You just have to rearrange the notes until the song is clear.
Oh, that's beautiful. So is that clear and then you paint it?
I paint it first and then I rearrange it and then I look at it and then I repaint with a different color if I don't like how it's looking. Oh. It's quite a long, long process.
But when you snap it, it's clear. Is it just plastic? Like, is it?
Mm-hmm. It's white. It's white.
Oh, it's white.
Plastic.
And then you paint it.
And then I paint it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
you really
it's
make
not...
things difficult for yourself, don't you?
It's my little kingdom. I mean, I kind of found all these little elements that I don't know many artists that work with cut styrene.
Yeah.
And then, like I do, it's sort of, that's the thing about not having gone to art school. You kind of make up stuff on your own.
Yeah, that's exactly what Lisa Congdon said. We were talking about that, and she said, you know, for the longest time, she had this sort of imposter syndrome, you know, and would apologize. Oh, I didn't go to art school, didn't go to art school. And now she's, you know, in her mid-40s, and she goes, in a way, I kind of think it was good, like, because she's like, I don't know what the rules are. So I just do whatever I want.
Yeah, I know. I'm sad I didn't go to art school, honestly, because I wasted a lot of time learning things that people who go to art school know.
Well.
What paint is, how you can use it, you know.
But you know what? I wasn't taught that.
Really?
No. My school was so conceptual and like they didn't teach us. The only classes where we learned how to do stuff were photography.
Yeah.
Because you're in a dark room and there are, it's science, you know, like there's steps. And then printmaking, same thing. There were rules, you know, there was acid and etching and there, you know, like you needed to go step by step in order to make the process happen. But as far as like painting and drawing and sculpture and all that stuff, the school I was in was just very like, I don't know. I kept saying, can somebody teach me how to do this? Nope.
Hmm.
So I didn't really, I was a painting major and I really wanted to learn. So I kind of just taught myself, like I minored in art history. So I was in love with impressionism and pointillism. So I would try that.
Right.
And then when I would get to school for the critique and they would say, you know, what does it mean? And I was like, oh, well, nothing. I just really wanted to, you know, I've been studying these artists and I really wanted to try their technique. And I got the worst grades because it wasn't deep and conceptual.
Well, how else are you supposed to learn?
I don't know. And I was 19. Like, what was I going to say that was deep and conceptual?
Oh, my
I'd just
God.
Been at the pub on Thursday night. That was about as deep and conceptual as it got. And so my friend Paul, he's a criminal lawyer now. He was full of shit. And so I used to invite him over on Thursday night before my crit on Friday. And I'd put the painting up for him and I'd say, Paul, what does this mean? And it would take him like a second and he'd be like, it's the faceless women artists of the world. And he'd like come up with like this crazy, like, you know, thing. And I was like, yeah. And I would go in the next day with his story and I'd get an A.
Oh my goodness. And I fell for that.
Yeah. And I was in third year and I remember thinking, oh, I'm just going to have to bullshit my way through the next year and a half. And I did. So I learned that at art school.
Well, you're making me feel a lot better about having not gone.
Well, you know, I just did this talk in Victoria a couple weeks ago, and there was a girl who was about to go to art school. She's like, so I tell all this story. She puts her hand up. I just got accepted for the fall. Like, do you think I shouldn't go? And I was like, no. Like, you know, there were wonderful things that I got out of art school. I also picked the wrong school for me. I didn't research it properly. Like, I'd gone to UVic to do marine biology because they're a great school for marine biology. Mm-hmm. And I did first year and then realized that I wanted to be doing art. And so instead of doing research and finding a school that I could go to, I just switched majors. You know, I stayed in the same school and I just switched from marine biology to art. And I'm sure that program was really great for some people. It just wasn't really great for me. And I just did it anyway because I was there, you know, and that was wrong. So that's what I always say to anybody, you know, about art school. Like, you can decide to go or not to go. You can be a very successful, like, look at you, look at Lisa Kong. There's so many people that are self-taught. Like,
yeah.
That's fine. Like, go, you know, that route works too. If you really want to go, do the work to make sure that you're picking a school. If you want to go there to learn technique, pick a college or school that will teach you that. If you want somewhere that's going to be very, very conceptual, go there. But I think your route is perfectly wonderful too. And, you know, that's what I try and tell anybody that I talk to. It's like, it doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters. What matters is exactly what you said. What about this? And what if I glued this to this? And what if I tried this material instead of not doing any of that? Whether you went to school or not, it's getting up in the morning and going, what if I tried that?
Yeah, I treat my art day like a full day. I'm in the studio 8 hours a day, every day. Mm-hmm. And I work. It's because I'm a workhorse. I love to work.
Yeah. Do you ever have days where you've kind of got nothing?
Oh, yeah.
And so what do you do? Do you just do like the cutting and like just the stuff?
I clean the studio.
Okay.
I clean it and I sort it. And then that always makes me happy. And then I get back to it.
Yeah. And while you're sorting.
You know, I make 80% crap like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. I don't mind.
Yeah. Well, and I find like I save all my crap. And then because I'm doing collage and I don't know if you can repurpose chunks of things, but you know, I'll have all these things that I consider garbage and then I'll be going through them another day and I'm like, hello, like if I just, you know, snip this corner off, suddenly I can turn it into something. And so I keep all my crap.
I keep some of it. I'm a big thrower aware.
That's good. That's a good skill too.
Yeah. Because I think once I'm done with it, I'm sitting here talking to you and staring at a piece that I've been thinking about for 5 weeks. I can't finish it.
Why? Just the composition is bothering you?
Yeah, it's not resolved. It's just sort of sitting there mocking me. And I put it up on the wall because I'm a sucker for being mocked when I'm trying to work.
Maybe you should just stop right now and just title it Mock.
Mock.
Mocking. Okay. And then it's done.
I'm doing it.
There you go.
And that's it. It's done.
And sell it for thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And it can go and mock somebody else in their house.
That's right. Yeah. Wow, I love this, but it's mocking me.
Okay, the only thing I have left is to ask you the speed round.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Ready?
This is my favorite part, you know, of every podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Charlie's been getting really into it lately and giving me suggestions. He didn't give me any for you, though, but... how many cats do you have?
Currently 4.
Okay. So this is a true or false question.
Okay.
Because I don't have cats, but I've heard rumors. True or false? Cats sit on art supplies and stop people from working.
False.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say true.
No, they're very polite. In fact, they skirt around the area.
You have very well-trained cats then, because I put out a thing, I was writing the new book, and there's a chapter all about excuses.
Yeah.
And I have my go-tos, you know, oh, it's too sunny, oh, it's too dark, oh, it's too morning, oh, it's too night. And so I thought, well, I wonder if other people have the same excuses as me or different. So I put it out on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, you know, give me your best excuses and I'll put like, you know, a few of them in the book. I got 340 something excuses. And I would say, I'm going to say 50 of them were cat related.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That, you know, like, oh, the cat's lying on my watercolors and he's sleeping so peacefully, I don't want to disturb him. Or, and I was like, I knew you had at least four. And I was like, well, go ahead.
Well, the only thing, I have a real big baby. He is very, very hysterically attached to me. So every time I sit down at the computer, he crawls into my lap, and he's almost 20 pounds. So that stops me from typing emails. That's probably about it.
Right. And so how long are you a sucker for before you put him back down?
Oh, way too long.
Yeah.
I mean, but I we moved into this new house, and I built my own studio. And it's detached from the house.
Okay.
So my contractor built, with much laughter on his part, I must say, he built a tunnel from the house to the studio so my cats can visit me during the day.
Oh, my God. It's like a bridge, like your old house, or like underground?
No, it's like the old house. It's a wire mesh studio, tunnel to the studio with holes cut into the studio that they can run in back and forth.
Oh my gosh.
It's the cutest thing. We all go to work together.
Well, I'm glad they're not sitting on your stuff then. I love that cat tunnel at your old house. I'm so glad you have another one.
I do.
Oh my God, I love it. Okay, that wasn't very fast, but at least we've got that covered. Okay,
yeah.
This may be very difficult for you to answer. Favorite color?
Oh,
right now.
Yeah, okay. Right now, it's this fluorescent pinky orange.
That's mine too.
Oh, just every time I look at it, my retinas feel so good, like I've taken a bath.
I know, me too. And I keep trying to branch out and try other colors, and then I'm like, hey there.
I know, I go back to it over and over again.
Me too. Okay, high fives on that.
Yeah.
If you could have a show anywhere, where would it be?
Here in Vancouver. That sounds so boring. I should say New York or Chicago, and I would love that. But I really love my city, and I want a show in my own city, and I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I would like to show the city what I can do.
Yeah.
And I think my art's very, very influenced by, you know, Vancouver and Vancouver artists of the past.
I think so too.
And so that's my first answer.
It's a good one. Okay.
It's not a cool answer.
No, but I totally get it. Being in Vancouver too for a long time, I just felt like it was impossible. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you have to go away to come home.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and since I'm never going to go away, I have to come home.
That's right. You can just pretend, oh, I was gone to London for 2 years, but I'm back.
And Vancouver as a whole goes, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll put it out in the universe and in the podcast sphere to say, come on, Vancouver.
Yeah.
Let's get this thing done. Maybe I could curate it.
Maybe you could.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did our first little thing at Goodrun. Maybe the next one's a big giant. Okay, that's in the universe now.
Okay.
Great. We'll get together for baked goods and discuss the details.
Let's do it.
Okay. And then just the last question. Are you a morning person or a night person?
Oh, morning.
Yeah.
I'm a chipper, insufferable person in the morning, singing and dancing. And
is it caffeine related, or is it just?
My physical pain is at the very least in the morning after a good night's sleep. So, yeah. I'm feeling good.
and then when do you run out of steam?
Yeah, I run out of steam about 4:35, and then I kind of hit the couch.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds pretty good.
It's a great life.
Yeah, that is a really good life. It's so funny with me because I didn't figure this out for years, but my creative mojo does not really kick in till about 3 p.m.
Oh.
Which was really hard working in advertising because you have to be there at 9.
Yes.
And but then I'd end up like getting into a good flow at 3 and like staying till 8 p.m.
Wow.
And so now that I work from home, I have kind of realized, so I do a lot of my admin stuff and whatever in the morning because I'm still productive. It's just, I'm not very creative. And then around 2:33, it's like, well, let's do this thing.
That's really important to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, you have to really pay attention.
You do, and it changes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it changes with your life and your age and all that stuff, yeah.
That's right. I'm not an early riser, but when I wake up, I'm a happy camper.
So cute. That's all I've got. That was the last one. This is the longest episode I've ever done.
That was a slow, fast round. Really?
Yeah. Yep, 1 hour, 4 minutes, 15 seconds.
I wish it was longer.
I know, me too. We need caffeine and treats, and I could go for like, four more. Well, that's what happens every time we see each other. It ends up being like hours and hours.
No, I know. And now I have an outside couch.
You do?
I do.
I have to come visit you. I'm going to be there in a couple of weeks, but I'm just like power in, power out.
Okay. Well, you come when you have a moment, when you have time.
I will. I always come loving. I love coming to visit you. And we'll get Jessica to come now that she's back in Vancouver.
Yeah. She's doing a residency in Boston right now.
Oh.
She'll be back.
So fancy, that one.
I know. Yeah. I know. She's going to be the famous one.
All of you guys are. And then Ben, too. Ben just had a show at Mayberry.
Mayberry.
Yeah, it's
I
up
know.
Right now.
I saw the pictures of it, the opening. It looks
so
wonderful.
So beautiful. Yeah.
He is my go-to person for new media. He's
no
the
kidding.
One who suggested styrene. He goes, you know, you're done with paper, Sarah. You should do polystyrene. And I went, what's that? And he showed me, and I went, oh. I have to use that.
Yeah. He is the king. I always say that. King of materials, that
he
guy.
He is. Yeah.
He's not afraid of anything.
That, no. And he's generous with his knowledge. He's not stingy about it.
No.
He wants everybody to succeed.
Yeah. I know.
And I think that's a wonderful thing in an artist where they don't just want to do it for themselves. They want everyone to benefit from their adventures.
I know. See, and I was so intimidated by you guys. And then you're all just so generous and so, you know, supportive. And that is really fantastic. I feel so blessed that I found you guys.
Thank you. I feel the same way about you. I feel like we all have to band together.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way we make it.
Yeah, I know. You can't do it by yourself. You've been alone in cockroach infested apartments in a full cast. Don't do that anymore.
No, I decided, no, that's not for me.
No, that wasn't that fun.
It was sure fun while it lasted.
That's right. Well, Sarah G. Miller, that's it.
Wow.
I love that so much. Thank you so much for doing this. And I know you are a private person, and so I didn't know if you would say yes to me or not. And I'm so glad that you did, and I'm sure everybody will. Just love this talk.
Thank you. I am a private person, but I'll talk about myself a lot if asked.
Oh, good. Well, we'll do a part two.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a shout next time I'm down, and I'm giving you a giant hug right now.
Okay. Not so tight.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. I will talk to you soon.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yay. Oh, Sarah.
That was really fun.
So fun. And I just, I felt so bad when I was planning this. I was like, I should know more of these answers. But every time I get your ear, I'm like, listen to me. I think because I feel so uncomfortable talking to people, and I feel so comfortable with you that I take every opportunity I can.
Well, I feel like we're really simpatico when it comes to art making and thinking about art and making things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I feel very similar to you.
Yeah, I know. There's a comfort there. And And same with Jessica, like doing the podcast with her was so hilarious, too, because it's just I know you guys so well. And in this area, like I've never talked to people about this. So I feel so comfortable with you guys and Ben, you know, like just such great people.
Yeah. Well, have you been working? Have you been making collages?
Yes.
And
so have you
I've been following, I know all the recent ones on Instagram.
Yeah. So that's what I'm making. And I feel kind of like you did when you started making your shape pieces. I feel like everybody get out. I got to work for the next 15 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I can see 20 years in front of me where before I used to just kind of do one-offs. You know, I'd have an idea and I'd do a one-off. And nothing was really consistent and nothing it got me excited to, like, keep going along that track.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't see why I would stop.
I find your works really interesting because the content is getting more and more and more unique.
Mm-hmm.
Like and narrative and personal and funny. I don't know. I've never seen anything quite like it ever.
I know.
And
you
I
know,
look at a lot of collage.
Well, I think I mean, I just did it over the holidays. I was just going to force myself to do one a day, you know, and
yeah.
I really wanted to get a little bit of paint in there. And I had this little
yeah.
vision of, you know, this blob of paint with a dude standing on it. And I was like, okay,
I'll
go make
it.
That.
Yeah.
And then I felt like, yeah, I was just like, just electric.
I know.
I think I made like 7 that day. And
wow.
I just was like, I think I'm at like 60 now.
Wow.
Like, I just can't stop.
Do you cut the shapes out beforehand and then compose? Or
yeah,
I
have
compose
a,
and cut at the same time?
No, I have a giant. So when I go into the studio and I never clean my studio. So if I go in there and I'm blocked,
yeah.
I like cutting. I just find it really comforting kind of. So I'll just
mm-hmm.
put music on and I just cut stuff out.
And
yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I just throw them in that bowl and
yeah.
then they're just done and they're ready. And then they just might sit for a year. Yeah, I don't know. And then what I've been doing is I'll lay out a whole bunch of paper, like maybe 10 or 20 sheets, and just do random brush strokes with, again, no plan. And it's like, oh, maybe I'll try a watercolor blob, or maybe I'll splat the, you know, hit the brush and make a spray. And I'll just do that. I let it all dry, go get yet another coffee. And then I come back in and I just sort of start picking the little people out of my bowl and sort of see where they land. You know, and instantly, like if I put them on the right blob, the little title, like the little thing instantly
mm-hmm.
is in my brain. I don't have, and then I just write it down. I just on a scrap piece of paper.
Oh my God. That's the most mysterious part to me.
Those titles?
Mm-hmm. I mean, where the hell do they come from?
I don't know. My little weirdo brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Your
I know.
Story making brain.
Yeah. I've always, same as you, I always wrote little books.
Yeah.
I always told little stories. I'd put on plays. And then in university, it was really beaten out of me to not be funny. Because I would always try and do funny things. And they were like, no, you're not, you know, no one's going to
yeah.
take you seriously. And so I was like, okay. But like, I'd had a pretty, like, growing up was kind of like a Juicy Fruit commercial, you know, like there was nothing. I don't know. I hadn't suffered, you know, I hadn't really like so different than you. I just hadn't gone through anything. So I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be, you know, where I'm supposed to be drawing this from. And so anyway, I squashed the funny thing and then, I could be funny in advertising.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And I could be myself and I could design, I could create, but it just, you know, when I would do work, I would try and be like, you know, after my grandmother died, I did all this work about my grandmother because I was so sad when she died. So I was like, yes, here's like this sad thing. But I hate looking at that art because it makes me sad. It makes me think of her, you know, and it's like, well, I don't want to be sad the entire time I'm in the studio. And then it was really when I did the podcast with Wayne White and he was talking about being funny and being, you know,
yep.
Getting slammed for it basically. And he was like, I love Wayne White. He was just like, ah, you know,
yeah.
He was like, I don't care. And I was like, well, if Wayne can say that, so can I. And I interviewed him. He was the last interview before Christmas. So like December 15th or something.
Yeah.
And then, so I decided that I was going to do a collage a day over the holidays. But I kept thinking about this talk with Wayne and I thought, yeah, f- it. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to be, I am funny. Why am I trying to not be funny? Like, it's a huge part of how my family interacts with each other, how I interact with my friends. It's like, why am I squashing it out of art that I love so much?
And why is humor and art divorced?
I don't know. Yeah.
You know, some of the greatest artists in the world are hilarious.
I know, but you know, a lot of them are men.
Yes. Yes.
And I really wanted to do a show a few years ago called Funny Girl and
yep.
have it and curate it and have it be all work of funny women. And I
yep.
could only find 4 that I knew of.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are way, way more. I just haven't come across them yet. And anytime I do, I jot them down in a little book. And then I remember thinking, well, why can't my art be funny? Like I'm having such a hard time. And I would find tons of men that were hilarious. But I think women have this thing where it's like, maybe you already feel like you're not taken seriously, so your work has to be super serious. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you really won't be taken seriously.
That's right. How to fling yourself further onto the margins.
Yeah. I don't know. Finally, I just thought, I don't care. And I don't care if I never sell any of these or I never show them. I don't care. Instagram is fine for me right now. Right. But Sarah, they make me so happy.
And it shows. I mean, it just radiates that happiness.
You know, thank you. And it's just crazy to me. I'm turning 43 next month, and it's like, wow, yeah. How did it take all of those? You know, I was 42 and a half when I figured this out. It's like, really? Like, and I've been making art since I was 1 and a half. And it took me all this time to get to a place of pure joy.
That I was 42 and I...
Were you?
That's when I first made my first piece of art.
I didn't know that. Oh my gosh, maybe there's something magical at 42.
I don't know what it is. All of a sudden, I just thought, I'm just going to do it.
Oh my God. See, we are simpatico.
I know.
Yeah, what a relief.
I think that's the word that sums it up. It was just the weight fell off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make it. I'm going to make it. And I'm going to see what happens. But unfortunately, I always are very career-minded. I mean,
I went into
art imagining, I mean, I said, I'm going to make a career of this art.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm that way inclined, and I'm not going to apologize for it, but it robs me of a sense of play that you have. I mean, you go in there and you play.
Mm-hmm.
And I admire that so much, that sense of play.
Well, right now, that's the thing. I've had 4 galleries approach me now,
mm-hmm.
Which is so flattering and warms my little artsy heart.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was just telling somebody else this the other day, I don't feel ready to show it yet. And I don't know why. And I think maybe I'm scared that then when if they sell, now it's a business and I'm kind of scared of the play going away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something I'm going to have to work through. Because I do. I mean, I don't want to stop myself. You know, I want to show them. I want to sell them like that. But I can feel that I'm not ready. And I need to feel ready. And just like I said about those other collages, like a day will come.
Yep.
When I'll go, okay.
But maybe you will never feel ready.
Maybe. So what should I do?
Do it anyway. When you're not feeling ready, because that day may never come. And I have a feeling looking at the brief glimpses I do see that you're ready. The work is ready. Maybe you're not.
Yeah.
But it is.
I'm biting my nails right now. Can you hear that?
Yeah. So any good galleries that you're interested in?
Yeah, there's a couple. There's one in New York.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Okay. You go with your gut though.
But you're probably right. You're usually always right when I bring up these things, which is why I always talk to you.
The thing is your gut has to know whether you're just afraid of it or if you're really not ready. You just have to sort that out. But I don't know. The work's pretty ready.
I think it's fear. I think it's that I'm liking them so much.
Yeah.
What if I put them out there and people don't like them?
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes that joy away from me.
Because it will happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's inevitable.
Yeah,
and it's
people
supposed
can't,
to happen.
Yeah. And I just think maybe I'm not ready to hear that yet or something. And you know, the thing is, I keep saying it shouldn't matter. Like, I love them. I've mm-hmm. never felt like that. That's good enough for me, which I do believe, I'm going to say 99%. I believe that. But then there's this little inkling of, I don't want some to say something and take my joy away.
Well,
and I can't give them that power. So that's dumb too.
Well, everyone says that, but that's ridiculous. It's just the way you feel.
It's just human nature.
What if someone did say, I don't like it. What would happen?
Nothing. And you know, there's been a few people on Instagram that have said that.
Yeah.
And normally I get my back right up, probably because I don't really like them either. So I get really defensive. And I was just like, okay. I don't care. That's one of my favorites. You know, I honestly didn't care. So maybe I am ready. I'm just being a chicken. What's the worst that can happen?
Well, I know the worst that can happen is that you stop working.
You won't let me though, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'll be so mad. You know, I had a,
no
I
muffins
had,
for you.
I had a really important gallery in Miami contact me,
yeah.
And he only does hard edged work, and he asked for some work, and I sent it down, and he hated it. And he said, I can't show this. This is not good work. And I said, well, then take it out back and burn it. Because I couldn't afford to have him send it back. It was the weirdest thing.
And so did he get rid of it?
Yeah, he did. He said, okay, I'm just going to throw it in the fireplace. And I said, well, just go do it. And then I just had like a week or so of being in a strange place where, did I care that he didn't like it? Was I destroyed by that, or how do I feel? And I'm not really, to this day, I'm not really sure how I feel. I'm kind of happy that he said he didn't like it because he didn't treat me like a baby.
Right.
He said, it's not right for my gallery. And I said, okay. And he says, you know, if you're going to work in hard edge abstraction, you've got to, you know, it's got to be better than this.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, I will listen to you very carefully and try to be better. It was a blow. It was not fun to hear, but I think it made me stronger. And then only recently do I think back on that and think, you know what? He wasn't right.
Mm.
He really didn't give it a fair shot.
Good for you.
It was a strange role. Like, I went back and forth like, oh God, I'm terrible. Obviously no one is going to like my work ever. To me thinking now, I don't think he was right.
You go, girl.
I know.
That's rude.
I hope he toasted a marshmallow on that work and had a s'more.
Oh, my God. At least then he got some enjoyment out of it.
That's right.
Oh, my God. You're awesome. All right.
Okay.
Well, now it's 5-something. We've both lost all of our steam.
I hope you didn't do your tricky thing where you tape this and you're going to put it on the...
Part. I did.
You're so tricky.
Can I keep it in even the Miami part?
Yes, you
good,
can.
Because you didn't name names. I was going to stop you if you named names. And that's a good story. So, yeah, I did do that thing. I am so sneaky.
You are sneaky, and I knew it was going to happen.
See,
and
that's
I
the thing.
I fell for it anyway.
I'm losing my sneakiness because people know I do it now. Some people just hang up. I say, okay, well, thanks. And then I go, are you there? And they've already hung up on me. I'm like, damn.
I should have done that.
They're on to me. Anyway, I'm putting up this. This is the longest podcast ever. I'm putting the whole thing up. People are going to be so happy because usually they're like around 40 minutes. Because when I first started the podcast, I thought, oh, you know, takes about half an hour, 40 minutes to go grocery shopping or to go for a run or go for a walk or, you know, I thought it was a good chunk of time. But now I've been getting all these emails that everybody listens in their studio when they're working. And 40 minutes isn't enough. They're like, they should be longer because then I can listen and keep working. And so, look, I'm giving them an hour 23.
Oh, they're going to be so bored.
No, think about the prolific work they're going to make by the end of it. They've got like an hour, almost an hour and 24 minutes now to do whatever they want.
Well, everyone who's listening and working, keep going.
Yeah, that's right. Keep going. Put on a little, I don't know, Sarah McLachlan.
Oh,
keep going.
No.
I know, I couldn't think of anything. I got nothing. I'm not a musical person. Okay, Sarah, I have to go make dinner. You have to go eat dinner. Tim's probably got a cup of tea waiting for you.
Oh, no, he doesn't get home for hours yet.
Oh,
but I do. And I have no kitchen to make dinner in.
Oh, the renos.
Yes. Yes, I will go clean my studio.
Okay. Well, tell Tim I say hi. And
okay.
If you see Jessica when she's back from Boston, give her a squeeze from me and I'll call you guys next time I'm there for more than 10 minutes.
All right. My couch is waiting for you.
Perfect. I'll be there.
All right.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. See, she is the best. S'mores roasted over art? Yeah, that is one of the many, many reasons I love her. I also love that she totally knew that I'd keep recording. I'll have to change my name to the Sneaky Curator. Speaking of which, if you're not listening from there already, pop over to my site, thejealouscurator.com, to see all of Sarah's work and a picture of me trying her drawing machine. Well, trying to do it without getting sick, anyway. Thank you so much to Sarah for doing this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode. And as always, thank you so much for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.